I think I need an adult to help me.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You are listening to Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards, also known as Mo Dick. This is episode 85.
Yes, it is.
There you are. Sorry. I've done this the wrong way around, just to spice things up, to see what would happen.
You caught me off guard. Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. This is episode 85, as Sean mentioned. But it's
Wait. If you try and do a creeper pun, yeah, right, only God can save you.
Oh. Well, I was going to say that, you know, this proves that misery never goes out of style.
Well, that is true, because I am miserable all the time as well, so... Yeah, that's just a statement more than a pun. But yeah, I will. I'll let it go because Creeper have used it as well. Yes, as we have now revealed, this week's guest is Will Gould. Gorgeous, lovely frontman of fantastic British goth rock outfit Creeper.
Yes, exactly. That was a very good description, Sean. But yes, the frontman of Britain's favourite cult-led goth band is with us for quite an artistic conversation this week as we pull back the curtain on all the band's theatrics, characters and concepts that have made them the emo punk force that they are today.
Yes. Do you know what, Morgan? That was well written and well remembered. Nice. We had a lovely, lovely chat with Will. And for a second, we touched on the fact that we had Hannah on a previous episode. And she kind of secretly unveiled some Creeper news, didn't she?
So, she did.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out that episode, go back to last year's Slam Dunk episode. It was after that, actually. We did our own episode with Hannah, didn't we?
Yeah, episode 31 features the lovely Hannah Hermione Greenwood.
Yeah, so check out it if you are a big fan of Creeper or you've never heard of Sapnin Podcast before. That's fair enough. That's completely understandable. We haven't done that much advertising, to be honest. But yeah, check it out, because that was a good chat as well.
Yeah, but of course, Will is with us now after the band's disappearing act for almost a year back in 2018. They have a new record available now on July 31st titled Sex, Death and the Infinite Void. And despite the title, it is not based off of Sean's life.
No, it isn't. Thank you. I'm glad you kind of brought that back to me, because I was trying to make you laugh all the way through that and it didn't work. So congratulations to you.
Ultimate professional.
Yeah, it does sound like, it sounds like a good weekend I had once, actually. So, I'm very, very excited.
What, Sex, Death and the Infinite Void?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I can't wait for it to come out. The songs they've released so far have been wicked and I'm very, very excited to hear the full thing, so...
Yeah, I'm very excited for this episode as well, because, you know, as we said, Creeper have got such a historic past with so many different stories and things that have happened to them in their career so far as a band. Will's going to open up all about it, and it's going to be a very insightful one, to say the least. I've got so many memories of watching Creeper in the past, from when they started out playing small shows in places like Le Pub in Newport in South Wales to playing the main stage at 2000 Trees Festival. And speaking of 2000 Trees, Sean,
yes,
we've been working with them a little bit this week.
Yes, we have. Of course, in case you didn't know, Thursday, which was yesterday when this podcast came out, bloody hell, we were asked by the people of 2000 Trees to present their festival 2000 Screens online, which, yeah, started yesterday. It goes on the 9th to the 11th of July, where myself and you were asked to interview some cool bands, introduce some bands to performances. We got to speak to the creators and organisers of 2000 Trees Festival, which I enjoyed.
We did.
So all of this can be found at on the 2000 Trees Facebook or Instagram. So check out at 2000 Trees.
Yes, it's the only place to get your 2000 Trees Festival fix this summer. One of our favourite events every single year. So sad that we couldn't be able to go down, as we were supposed to be officially opening every day of the festival this year live in a tent, which would have been an experience and a half. But to be involved in this is being very cool. We're excited to see everyone's reaction to it. And yes, just full of loads of acoustic sessions, interviews and whatnot. So go and check out 2000 Screens if you haven't already. And then if you're on the social media platforms that we all like to post things and share our thoughts, feelings and pictures, why not go and give us a follow on our Twitter and Instagram at SapninPod.
Yes, that's at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. I say it slow because the amount of other people's podcasts I listen to where they say a website and then spell it out equally as fast as they said it, and then I don't understand what they were just saying, that really gets to me. So for you guys, at SAPPENINPOD, let us know your thoughts, let us know future guests you're interested in hearing from, let us know if there's any questions you have about the podcast, mine or Morgan's lives. And everything else at Sapling Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, nothing is off the table, even though we do not own a table. And if you're checking things out as well, please head over to our wonderful Patreon page, patreon.com/Sapnin, where our loving community create some fantastic situations we find ourselves in, and you can be a part of it and get some bonus podcasts, extras, videos and all sorts of crazy nights.
Yeah, check out patreon.com/sapnin, and if you've enjoyed absolutely any of these episodes and you want to help and support or maybe even give back to the podcast, that would be fan bloody tastic. Right then, Morg, without further ado, shall we get into this podcast with the beautiful, beautiful man that is Will Gould?
He is beautiful. He is gothic. Misery never goes out of style. This is quite cheery and miserable at the same time, but you're all going to enjoy it. Share it with everyone. This is episode 85 of Sapnin Podcast with Will from Creeper. Have at it.
I thought that was never going to end then. Sapnin! Get on the bloody interview.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Sapnin!
Do I have to say that as well?
Oh, would have been nice. Would have been nice, but I mean...
Well, see, this is the one thing you didn't brief me on. I didn't know I had to say Sapnin. Do you want to try again?
I can't.
No, we're in it now. This is started.
We've started, right? Despite the awful start, our guest this week is the ever lovely and brilliant Will Gould from Creeper. How are you?
I'm okay. Everything's not so bad. It's a bit grey in the sky today, but other than that, everything's fine. How about you guys? How's everything been? What's it like doing a podcast while you're in the middle of a pandemic? How's that working out?
It's interesting. I'll tell you that. It's a little bit different. Learning how to do it on the interweb, but we're getting there.
Yeah, you'd expect all the guests. Well, I know where all the guests are. They're in their houses, right? But then getting in touch with the guests and getting them to sort out a time to do it has been difficult.
I suppose you have to get creative with it, don't you? It's like everything at the moment. Gonna have to roll with it.
Yeah, I understand. You know, like I wake up in the morning sometimes and I don't want to talk to Morgan. So I understand that other people probably don't want to talk to Morgan or me either.
Definitely. So I'm more surprised that Mark Hoppus hasn't given me a restraining order by now, because the amount of emails I've sent to Blink is it's ridiculous.
You'd,
so
you'd think he'd just block you, mark@markhoppus.com or whatever. But yeah, what have you been up to in this crazy period?
I feel like it's been one of those periods of time where it's just been like a resetting period. There's been so much you can do, trying to work out how to be creative in this sort of environment. It hasn't been that much of a challenge, really, because I think coming from punk rock and stuff, you're very used to making something from nothing anyway. Yeah. And so like having a little bit more constraint around you, It's been a little bit of a challenge here and there, but it's been about like kind of creating content, creating music, creating things that we would do anyway, but just with another layer of difficulty around it. You know, the internet like this makes it really easy, though.
Yeah, it does help. It does help. Also, I was being a little nosy earlier and saw that you've actually, is it true you've moved house?
I have moved house. Yeah, I'm in Manchester.
Ooh,
which is really cool. It's really funny. Like it took me a while to kind of work it all out, really, because I was doing Creeper, the Creeper album for quite a minute, and then I was living at my girlfriend's house in Manchester for quite a while, and then we put a deposit down on a flat just before the lockdown. Then lockdown happened, so we couldn't move, and but then by the time we came to move in, like, it was an unfurnished flat, so I was just gonna sort it all out when we got there. But we couldn't get anyone to deliver anything because it, like, furniture and stuff that at that period of time it's still not okay to use the post. So I kind of felt a bit guilty doing that. So it's been a bit of a challenge in itself, that on its own, to be honest.
Yeah, sounds it. Yeah.
Cool. It's been really good fun. Manchester's so much fun. I never thought I'd end up in Manchester, to be honest, being from Southampton. Mm. But it's beautiful. There's so much to do. It's like a really manageable London, isn't it? That's what I always imagine it like.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's quite a good description, but I'm sure everybody from Manchester is absolutely cursing it. Like, they're like, wait. No, you can't come up here and see those things.
I live there now, so they can't get rid of me. They've allowed
That's
me.
True, you're native now. Yeah.
They all had to have a vote, and they allowed me to stay there, so it's okay.
You're technically one of them now, so they can't. That's it. You're in now. the record coming out. It got pushed back to the end of this month, right? It was meant to come out earlier.
Yeah, it was meant to come out earlier. I think like a lot of records got pushed back, but it's not a sort of time.
Yeah.
I kind of knew something was going to happen with it when I heard that Biffy Clyro's record was getting pushed back. I thought if they're going to get pushed back, they're never going to push our one back because our one's nowhere near as big as that, is it? So I kind of saw it coming. And in a weird way, it's kind of been like a blessing in disguise because it's enabled us to make a lot more content, do a lot more with the music videos and things. Like, we release so many singles now, it's crazy. But it's all been really good. It's allowed us to kind of show the world and the narrative of the record off a little bit more, in a bit more depth. I've actually quite enjoyed the little bit of a delay it's had, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, and really, this is almost a kind of second coming of Creeper in many ways with the release of Sex, Death and the Infinite Void. Obviously, you all took time off in between this record and everything, reinventing yourselves in many ways. For you, does this really feel like a second beginning for the band?
Yeah, I think it kind of had to be in a way. This kind of destroying everything to rebuild it was always what we were going to do anyway. And despite everybody at the record label telling us not to. But it's one of those things where I felt like we'd taken what we'd done before as far as we could. And we always wanted to reimagine it and come up with something else. I just didn't realize quite how long it was going to take. It took a lot longer than I imagined. When you're making these sorts of things, it's like when you make your first record, they always say you have 3 years to make your first record and then like no time at all to make the second. And I know, Sean, you definitely know about that too. It's one of those things. And so I really didn't want to, I felt like it was really important to stick to my guns a bit. And I'd spoken up a lot in the press about how we were going to do this, how if we ever made another record that we'd completely destroy the band and begin it again. And I felt like it was time to kind of put up or shut up a little bit with it. And, I think it's been difficult for some people to understand why you'd kill off something that like a logo. We sold so many t-shirts. trying to tell people that you're going to do something else. But it was really important, I think, like trying to see this from an artistic point of view and trying to see yourself as a pretentious artist as in the way that we try to do in this in music. I think it was the right decision. And it's a lot more punk sometimes to make something that doesn't sound punk. If that makes any sense to you guys.
Yeah. No, it does. It does totally. I was listening to All My Friends earlier. And I got some awesome different kind of vibes from what I think is the, previous Creeper material. I was getting a lot more, I don't know how you're going to take this. I was getting a lot more. Well, I was getting a lot of Bowie, Havoc, and Jarvis Cockery vibes to it. How do you?
Well, that's the Holy Trinity.
Good.
Very cool. Yeah, absolutely. That was one of those songs. It was really funny. That one we wrote in about 45 minutes. So just sat at a piano in the studio. But it was about a really difficult situation with my best friend Creeper, Ian from Creeper, who was hospitalized so he couldn't come out to LA. So I wrote it for him, like a real pit of despair. And it's one of those ones where, sometimes the song kind of has to expel itself from you, it kind of falls out of you rather than you wanting to try and summon it up. And those are always the ones that are easiest to write because it's just desperate to get out of you. And that was like one of those. They don't happen all the time either. It's a weird one. And I didn't want to put it on the record. I felt like it was too personal. With Creeper, what I try to do a lot of the time is to kind of mix a reality and a fiction. I felt like this one was far too real but for a Creeper record. I felt like it didn't have, it wasn't shielded. I wasn't there was nothing to hide behind in any sort of way with this one for me. And so it was really uncomfortable. But it was actually Hannah from the band, who you guys have had on your show before, right?
Yes, we have, sorry.
Yes, I understand. Don't worry, I'm not the important one. She said that it was, she was said to me, oh, I'd really like you to put this song on. I really would like you to do this one. And it was a weird one. And filming the video was really funny as well. We had, in lockdown, trying to film videos is the most hilarious thing. My wonderful girlfriend did my makeup for it. And she also had to help me film it. And we couldn't film it until it was dark outside because the lights wouldn't work. So, we had some beers. And by the time we'd finished, it was like 5 in the morning. And I just thought, Jesus Christ, she's worked with Creeper for a number of years, and I put her through all sorts of nonsense over the time, and in terms of like playing a character in one of the stories and all these different video shoots and things. But this is the first time she was like doing my makeup and filming it and directing me, and so it was.
Wow,
that's mad.
Fair play,
incredible, yeah. But with that, I mean, Creeper have always had these really unique and artistic concepts throughout the band's history, in the material, the image, everything really associated with the band. For you, is that just a big element of it, that there's so much more than Creeper than just the music? It's a whole experience, really.
Well, I always wanted to be a filmmaker, really. I never really saw myself as a singer for a band. I've always felt like, you know, it's quite easy to feel, have imposter syndrome with a lot of this, especially when things have gone so nicely over the last few years. I've been so lucky. But I always wanted to make films. That was always what I was really interested in. I wasn't so much, I was a massive music fan, I'm a real music nerd, but I never really was so much interested in being at the front of a band. So I found it easier to kind of do the Bowie thing and hide behind a series of characters. And it also then informs your videos, which is where, and the storytelling around that, which was really where I had a real interest. So, and it's kind of like, as I said before, about fusing your real life into the fiction. And it became easier to sing from the point of view of a character than it did as myself. And it made me more confident on stage as well. I was very like weird when I was younger. I was very, had a real like stammer and spoke very fast, and just wasn't really cut out to be like doing what I'm doing now. It's kind of a happy accident. It's kind of fell this way. But yeah, that's such a massive part of Creeper. And I think it's a really big part of why our audience responds so well to it. Obviously, there was that gap in time, and you know, with My Chemical Romance disappearing ages ago, there was kind of a void in this country and for storytelling in kind of rock and emo music, I suppose. And we kind of unconsciously filled that void for some people for a little while, and that's a really nice feeling too. Like, I suppose, I think we have like a history as of a country of really responding well to big theatrical kind of bombastic rock music, like in that sort of, you think about the 70s, the music we produced in the 70s in terms of Bowie and Mark Bolan. And then even in the 90s, you mentioned Jarvis Cocker, but we've, you know, those pop records are like a huge over the top, some of them, you know, and expert in storytelling too. I think we've always really responded well to that. And it's really cool to get to kind of do my own thing in that world as well, you know, and have people actually turn up to listen to it. Something you can't imagine when it first starts, you know.
How does all of that side of things really come together as well? I know you and Ian really plan out the majority of like the storytelling behind a record. Is it just ages in advance of like planning it all out, or is it just trying to incorporate those real life elements into characters as well, as you mentioned?
Well, it really varies each time around we do it. And it's sometimes like you'll start off with something. So for this coming one, I'd made a records narrative when I was out in America. We stopped at a place called Dunsmere in California on a tour. And I'd been drinking gin the night before. we were touring around in this little kind of, you know, do you guys know what a party bus is? You know, like they have them when you go to prom. Like our friend was trying to help us do this with onto a water parks out there. And we just opened it up for them. It was really fun. And I can do it on the cheap. So the bled like lent us like a base cab. And like we had this party van that was Dirk's brother's. And anyway, I've been drinking all this gin the night before, and we parked up somewhere. I didn't know where we were at the time. And I kind of exited the party bus, threw up all this clear stuff, like kind of disgusting and mucousy gin. And I was like, where the fucking hell are we? And I looked around, and it was just the most beautiful kind of real life Twin Peaks, you know, these beautiful mountains and these beautiful redwood trees and this weird little town that's kind of existed inside of it. We were like fascinated. We spent the day walking around and going to a little shop where like everyone knew everyone. And I was like, it's crazy that this sort of thing actually exists. And I started thinking about how our last record kind of told the story of where we come from and where we began. That this new record currently to tell the story of where we were going, where we've been since, you know, where we've been going. And so we spent so much time in America and touring and promoting the last record. It seemed like we were basically over there all the time at that moment. So it made sense to kind of start a starting point with like the location. And then I started kind of fusing in a few other things that I was reading. I was reading a book called K-Pax. They made this awful film about it with Kevin Spacey. Yeah. It was absolutely cancelled. But it's a terrible film, but it's a wonderful book. It's a trilogy series. And it was about a man who was from another place. It's this classic me, isn't it? Like, all this, my favorite things are like that, you know. I love my favorite Marilyn Manson record was Mechanical Animals, and you know, I love Ziggy Stardust and all that. I know, like, it's a classic me, but it was about a man who said he was from another place, and he was in a psychiatric hospital. It was the whole book is a kind of a is he, isn't he sort of situation. And I thought that was a really fun thing to play with, and I thought what would really upset a small town like Dunsmuir would be this character arriving. It was also riffing on like Wayward Pine, if you've ever seen that series, and a lot of kind of homages. And that's one of the things we try to do quite a lot with Creeper, is kind of homage and reference a lot of different material. So yeah, like we had characters called the Men Behind the Curtain, which was a reference to, if you've ever seen Dark City, I don't know if you've seen that, Mitchell O'Brien's character in Dark City. So yeah, it all came together. We end up with this kind of box of tools that you kind of magpie over time. And I just, it's not really, I don't, can't really take credit for a lot of it, because the things are already there. It's just a case of kind of sewing them all together into kind of a patchwork quilt of a story. And this is one of the ones I'm more proud of, though. I think this is, it's come out quite nicely, but it was written quite a while before we did the record, we did the music. And I remember really vividly on the last album, being downstairs in the Warner office and Phil Christie, who's an A&R there, coming by and going, and then I had some people around me, and they said, oh, come listen to this. And I was saying, so we're going to do this thing where we make Southampton seem larger than life. There's going to be three characters that represent each of the main characters from Peter Pan, James Scythe, which is, you know, a James Hook, Captain Hook thing, and the Lost Boys would be the Callous Heart, and the TikTok, the crocodile, you know, always chasing time, would be with the Stranger. And he said, oh, that all sounds amazing. So what's the record going to sound like? And I was like, I'll just write some romantic fun stuff. It'll be fine with it.
Awesome. Yeah. How did they react to that when you were like, not sure yet?
Well, I think the thing is, like, that stuff's really, like, I've been playing in bands since I was like, I don't know, 15 or something. So then the music stuff is like, it's got another side to it, you know? Sometimes, even though it's often feels like, these days, the way people treat music is like a jingle for a t-shirt company rather than, that's kind of sometimes the way people make you feel about it with how little it matters to some people. But it means a lot to me. And so like the music stuff is like, it's almost like a separate thing. It's something that like, it's really cool to sit down. And so you've got a narrative, and often what we'll do is have a whiteboard and we'll write like a series of plot points out, and we'll write to the plot points. We'll write like the song around the plot points. This is why we had like about 50 different songs for this record.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's super interesting to hear, because, yeah, like I'm literally hearing that from a different... I hate to call myself a songwriter. I'm not a songwriter. I can't play an instrument. I can barely hold a note, right? But you're in a different writing process is always interesting to me. I write completely different. I just throw a melody out there first and then write the words to the melody if I can. But it's just super interesting to hear other people's stories. Did you work with a certain producer for this album?
Oh yeah, we worked with, so they sent us out to, I wanted to make it in America because we were making this American record and it was set in America, and you know, it just all seemed to make sense to do it that way. And I was like, wouldn't it be like, we were kind of playing with the classic trope of like, oh, when a band sells out, they go to Hollywood and make a Hollywood record. And me and Ian always found that really funny because we spent so many years in his mum's shed writing songs. That like the idea of us selling out seemed really funny. And we've been called that like over the years a few times. So I thought like, let's go and fucking, let's be a caricature of a rock band. Let's go and make a record in Hollywood. And so we went out there and they sent us to meet loads of different producers. And it was a really interesting time. Like, we met a lot of really talented people, like, you know, collaborators and producers, but nothing was really right. I felt like we were really at risk, if I'm honest, of like retracing old steps and making a more manicured version of our last record, and which was, to me, is just so disinteresting to me. And because I think, again, like to try and explain, like I never really had any aspirations of being like a rock star or anything like that. I always wanted to tell stories. And so like the idea of just kind of doing a little bit of life support to prolong a career of a band just didn't make any sense to me. I wanted to smash it all to bits and rebuild it something else. So we had to ignore those things. And we had a lot of people telling us that if you you shouldn't progress your sound any more than 20% each time, each record. And I just hated it. I just thought it was just completely the opposite to the way I'd like to work. And in the end, we met a man called Zandy Barry on the very last day of being in town. And he's a man not from kind of our world at all. Like he's made some really, really great records over his time. And he worked out of a small studio that used to have The Doors and like Jimi Hendrix and all these old. It was just kind of fed into the whole making a record in Hollywood. It's going to be this ridiculous record with it in this place. Where the Doors came, you know, and it was off Sunset, and we really struck it up with him. We almost didn't. He was the last person we saw, and we almost weren't going to do the record in LA at the end of it because I wasn't. We'd been back and forth a few times, but you know, when you're just not feeling it, like it was just. I felt like I was going to be going through the motions. And if I'm honest with the two of you, the year before we broke the band up. I'd grown a little bit mechanical in my performance, I think. And I felt like we were playing very big shows. We're very lucky and very, very privileged to have been asked to do these things. But like these huge shows, it kind of lost all the vibe and the storytelling of what we were doing. It became like a big opportunity each time. And you know, Sean, I know you've, you know, exactly what I'm talking about. When you get to a big, big show like that, you can't even see your faces anymore. It's just lights and playing the pop crowds and things, which was really fun and really interesting. I just kind of lost, it lost its edge. So I felt like an aggressive reinvention was really overdue. Yeah. So meeting this guy who'd made, he wrote songs with Britney Spears and he did stuff with Billie Eilish made some Miley Cyrus records and things like, he was like a really obscure choice. He made the majority of his money making scores for films. And again, that's what drew me in. He showed me some of his work and it was like really grand string arrangements. And I just thought it was really, really impressive. And so we hit off straight away and he was asking me about my life and what was going on with me. And he was a really, really interesting guy. Like I was going through a very, very anxious time at that point in my life, and especially with Ian, what was happening with him. And I used to call him Zendy because he would like be so zen in the studio. And you know, I'd be sat out on his swinging chair just smoking cigarettes outside and he'd just talk to me and he'd always really chill me out. And it's a really weird experience. And I can't explain it to you guys how making it was like really kind of a cathartic and a growing experience too. And yeah, an unusual one, I suppose.
But yeah, as you said, like you know, on paper, it sounds like a completely unexpected choice for a Creeper record. But when you put it like that, I mean, it seems like the perfect one in the end.
Yeah, I think it was. I think like what we were trying to do with it was trying to make this American sounding record with a Hollywood sheen. And I started trying to work out how we could try and take like we're making a record about an outsider in a small town, you know. So the idea about being an Englishman making a records in America kind of checked really nicely. So we started trying to thread like Britpop and things that are inherently British and trying to thread that through the eye of an American needle, so to speak, and make this record that was... you know, we had members of the Los Angeles Philharmonic on it, which was so cool for me because I'm really into all that stuff. And like that big bombastic theatricality over the top of kind of like a Britpop riff. And I just thought that was really fun. And I felt like even if people hated it, like they wouldn't have heard, no one else is going to put that out this year. You know, like it's going to be something that's just kind of inherently ours at that point. So yeah, I think he was a really, we couldn't have made this record without him. He went above and beyond and he's become such a really close friend of mine now. And he calls me all the time to check up on how things are going and just a really nice guy, you know. And when you meet people like that, you should keep them close. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I completely concur. Yeah, were you nervous when you ended the band? I remember seeing footage of it. Yeah, were you nervous about what the fans would think, say, and do, maybe? Because like, I'm guessing you knew all the time that you were coming back, but obviously they didn't. Was there any nerves in you with what was going on?
I think, to be honest with you, Sean, like when we were doing those things, like I'm so caught up in what we're doing. Like I'm the orchestrator a lot of the time with the silly nonsense that we do. And I was just kind of focused on the magic trick. of the vanishing on stage, and having we had a van outside the back of the theatre at the Coco to get into straight away and to get out of there. And so we had a distraction of this like a kabuki of our old logo that dropped to reveal a movie screen, which we had all planned and prepped. And it was one of those days where I told my manager that I wanted two kabukis for this one show, and one of those awkward conversations. I also had to go to the record label to talk to them about the wording I was going to use on stage, which I really remember. They were really concerned about how it was going to sound. And I had to say to them, David Bowie was on Parlophone, which is a floor downstairs, and he did this exact same stunt, you know, like, so I use the same wording as Bowie on purpose for that reason. But you don't, like, I kind of feel like sometimes I need to distance myself from what people are going to think in order to give the best possible performance, if that makes sense. Like, I knew afterwards there was a real uproar, and we received some nasty messages, and that's fine. Like, it's okay. But like, I felt like what it was a really, in my mind, was a big piece of performance art, and it had to go that way. We came in on this record of a disappearing act, and I wanted to end on a disappearing act. So you can disappear on social media with quite ease, you know, like quite sufficient ease. But like with the disappearing on stage in front of all those people, and then running to the back of the venue and realizing that you've completely gone, it took a lot more of like a coordination, and it was like, it felt like a grand trick, and then to disappear on a social media blackout for a year while all your friends' bands are out playing and performing, you know, and you're kind of watching from the sidelines. It's a weird feeling, but I didn't feel nervous that much. I felt like I was shocked at the response on stage after I'd said the speech. It was like a panic in the room. Yeah, like it was a really odd sensation. But I still stand by it. I'm still really proud of that, of how that was put together. I had to do the venue meeting before the show. I had to tell everybody what was going to happen. I had to have all the staff there. This weird stuff, and man, I had like a little piece of paper on a stage, and I was explaining how the kabuki's gonna work. yeah, it's like a big orchestration of this stuff, and but that's kind of what we do. That's what makes that's our band, you know. And that's like when you come to see our band, I like to think that you don't know what you're gonna see, and that's our own little world, and that's kind of, and people know that from us now at this point. They know that. They're probably in for a bit of a wild ride. It's not easy to be a fan of our band because we might disappear for a year and then we might reappear under a completely different name, you know?
Yeah. We're releasing the single this Friday. Only joking, we split up Thursday. Ta-da! Oh, no! You've done it again! Yeah, how far in advance did you know that you were going to end it like that? Like, did you have to sit down with the label and be like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, in 2 weeks we're knocking on the head for a year?
Well, I know I had, the thing is with all this stuff, Sean, it's like, it's never, I don't want to be like, the label are absolutely incredible and incredibly supportive and been a big factor in why the band has done so well, for one thing. But I do find with these things, like when I wanted to delete all the social media, they were like, why don't you just disable it for now? And I was like, no, it has to all go because they'll be able to find stuff there still. Why don't you just post something? And we just did it anyway at the beginning. There's always like a little lack of like a panic from them as well at the beginning. And then afterwards, it all kind of works out. And we did have to have a conversation with the record label about this breakup show. And I'd always planned this. I planned it like at the beginning of the campaign. I knew this is how it ended. Like I like to have a beginning and end, and kind of we do work things out in between. But when I had an A&R and our head of marketing come down to meet me in Southampton at my friend's house when we were like, so album two, what are you going to do? And I handed them this big PDF and the first page was about the band breaking up on stage. And they were like, for fuck's sake. So yeah, it's one of those things, but I'm glad that like we can do that stuff and it's fun because again, it keeps people on their toes and it keeps things different. And I like to think that's one of the things that makes us stand apart, you know, that you might not be, it might be the last time you ever see us. At one point, we'll pull one of these stunts and it will be the end. And you went, no.
Nice. Yeah, no, as you said, it's interesting. It's interesting because so many bands will just go, oh, all right, we're off to write another album now. And then you're waiting about or whatever. And no, it's just such a good idea. Very creative. I liked it. You pulled it off fantastically. Well done.
Thanks, Sean.
But you know, mention taking that year off as well. I want to go back to Eternity in Your Arms a little bit, because with that record, you guys were touring nonstop for so long, all around the UK, Europe, United States. As you mentioned, that kind of Carless Heart logo was everywhere. I even remember seeing Matt Willis and Busted having a pin when they were playing. Like it just got all across the scene. For you, really, because Creeper were nonstop for such a long period of time, do you feel like you all needed that year off in many ways?
Oh, God, yeah. That was one of the reasons we didn't come back as soon as it was originally planned to. I think that we were all ready to break. You know, I was saying previously about the feeling mechanical on stage a little bit towards the end of the last campaign. We needed to revitalize ourselves, and I felt like I needed to reimagine my stage persona and what I was going to do with that stuff. But we all needed a break in general anyway. Being away from home is so difficult all that time. And, you know, like the nature of just being a human being means that, like, there's always things going on elsewhere. You know, Ian's stuff, like he was getting very unwell. And, you know, like all sorts of personal stuff going on. Like my mum's partner had just passed away at a similar sort of time. It was really sad. And so we needed this gap to kind of lick our wounds from what happened before, and also kind of deal with, like, life stuff, you know. And and it's never easy, it's never simple, there's no like quick fix or anything. It's just like kind of a time thing. You're just gonna have to, you know, to get to the point we are now, let's get over kind of incredible pangs of anxiety and like depression and stuff to get through that year. It was a really, really tricky year when my guitar player and you know, the obvious main songwriter in the band was sectioned. It was like, That's really, like, it was really weird and hard and heavy. Like, this is like really real world stuff. Like, lots of, you know, you think about things that happen in your life, it doesn't really get much more serious than that. And I was out in Los Angeles on my own a lot of the times. And so trying to work out how the band continues, there was a certain point where I didn't think the band was going to come back at all. So, like, even though that was the plan, was always to come back, we already started the process of the record. It seemed like an impossibility on some occasions. So we absolutely needed the time off to kind of just repair, you know. And it can be quite like quite brutal and quite like a race of persistence, like being in a touring band sometimes, you know. It's like running a marathon, not a sprint, so to say. I always think that's really true. I think that, like, it's very easy to burn yourself out. How many bands you see get really burnt out? I think we were burnt out, to be honest. And I think we definitely needed this little time away. It's allowed us to come back as well with, like, not only are we excited about returning to stay and playing our old songs, but we've got this whole new persona that we've managed to craft in the shadows too. And so, yeah, it's exciting, you know. I think that there is too much of a pressure on young artists these days to constantly throw out material in general. But, like, you're always told that you should be pushing singles out all the time. And some artists are, like, prolific with that stuff and are really good with it. But I do think that there's back in the day when you would get one AFI record every 5 years, you know, it made you appreciate it when it came out, though, and when you got it. And also it gives that band a chance to replenish itself. And I know it's a different time now, and it's probably not the most convenient thing to do when there's so much competition out there. You know, for us, it was really important. And it's so funny, I've been talking about this year off we've had, the missing year, we've been calling it. So it's a very pretentious name for taking a year off your band, isn't it? But that's very typical of us again. The missing year, like, you know, that would be like par for the course back in the day, having a year off to do a record. But, like, it seems odder, I think, because we've done it in 2020. And you know what? We missed a year of our career and then walked back in voluntarily. And then this next time we missed one. This is stolen from us.
couldn't have planned it. But no, I think that's really interesting to hear you say, because I don't think a lot of music fans understand that, like, you know, when they see a band just taking off and doing all these tours and everything, it is very exciting, but you're missing a lot of things in your personal life, and it's really hard to keep up with everything going on when you're just tour after tour after tour in so many different countries and just playing those same songs night after night.
Oh yeah, like it's the weirdest thing. Like you miss weddings, birthdays, and you know, kind of your nieces and nephews being born, and all sorts of stuff. You miss it all, and it really trashes relationships. But like, it completely like ruins relationships. I think everything, every relationship I have, every friendship and everything like that, has always it's absolutely been affected by the choice to do this. It makes you wonder why you choose to do it, doesn't it? but yeah, it certainly is. And it's funny as well. One of the things I think about recently is when Creeper first came on the scene, we'd been in another band before that, me and Ian, for 7 years prior. And we'd been touring since we were teenagers. But no one ever saw us because we played to nobody. we were touring nonstop and living at our parents' houses and, you know, all that shit that you do when you're younger. But by the time Creeper came around, I remember there being like a, where did this band come from? They got a lot of press attention. They, you know, like I remember a lot of those sorts of discussions being like people would tell me like, but like it was really because like we'd been doing that for ages and ages and ages before. And this is just kind of the one thing that kind of worked, you know? And that's the thing. Like a lot of the time, all this work goes completely unrecognized. Often when we're doing the, have you guys ever done those things in universities where they ask you to go and talk to people who are on music courses and things? Have you ever done one of those?
They didn't ask me. They didn't ask me.
I mean, that's exactly how I feel, Sean. I whisper such a forward standing up there. They say, oh, so what would your advice be to have your career? And I was just thinking, every time they say stuff out to me, I always just think, I would not be here. I wouldn't be here for one. Like, I wouldn't be like learning music because I just kind of learned it and just did it, you know? Like, you just kind of go and, like, you know, live on hummus and pit bread and sleep in service station car parks and wash in those trucker showers, you know? Yeah. Bring a pair of flip-flops, though, because there seems to be cum on the floor of every single one of those showers. that's the thing that people don't understand. There's like there is an awful lot of complete ridiculousness that comes into. I haven't just woken up one day and my band got signed and then this happened. That's not. And even when your band gets signed, that's not you done. That's the beginning of the journey. That's the very very foundation of that thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they tell me at the record label. Like a lot of people get wrong. They sign bands and the band thinks they've just made it and they've done that and. They're not really making ideas and stuff. It's weird.
So many bands think the end goal is to be signed. And I think, maybe now more than ever, I don't know if that applies as much. Like you can just become internet savvy. You can kind of learn the majority of it yourself nowadays, I think. But it's crazy how kids just think, oh, well, if I get my band signed, I'll just be rich and surely the record label does everything. Nah, that's when the work starts because then ultimately you've got to 100%. You've then got to go and pay the record label back.
That's the thing, that's when it all begins. Like that's when everything begins because then they're going to ask you, so what ideas have you got? And if you haven't got like a lot of ideas ready to go, then you're going to have to you're waiting for the record label to make the video for you. Then my goodness, you're going to end up something awful. It's going to be so bad. You shouldn't let anyone else be involved. That's the one thing I would say to you, to anyone listening that that is going to might be in that position. Just don't let anyone else be involved in what you're making. Like it's unless you really trust them implicitly. I feel like it's really really important to keep being really protective of that and have lots of different ideas. If the real work begins at the very second you get signed, you're completely right there. It's about kind of now you've got to sell these records. You've got to repay that advance. You've got to recoup that advance that they've given you. They're giving you some money, but like it's probably not a lot of money still. And you've got to repay that. But like before, you weren't making a lot of money to begin with. So how you have to grow substantially to be able to repay this money. And it's a wonderful business, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Oh, incredible. Nice. But you know, mentioning the early days and going back to that first album cycle, I mean, I don't think I've seen a fan base grow as much as that kind of Creeper cult when you guys were first hitting the scene and everything. You know, you played a lot in South Wales over that time and going to gigs, I'd always notice a large group of people always connecting with each other, people meeting new friends and stuff like that. For you, was it just a crazy experience to see that kind of enthusiasm and have that cult following so early on?
Well, it was really strange because like, like I was used to, like, I was a, like, a punk kid. Like I was a DIY punk kid. I played in like shouty hardcore bands. Like all before I started doing Creeper, it was kind of always that way. Even though my last band started going more the way that Creeper would, and in those bands, when someone would come off the stage, they would just be exactly the same as the audience. You know, you would like you wouldn't expect any sort of adulation for performing. It would just be a part of what would happen. And so I got to admit, I did find it really odd when people would want to do photos and things and would see me around, or someone would be filming me while I'm shopping in something like that. I used to find that really odd. But like over time, what I realized was that like something really special was happening. And even though it would have been completely an accident for me, I think a lot of these younger people that were the same as me, you know, kind of lost and kind of didn't really fit in a single place. I feel like a lot with this sort of music and the sort of music that we play, like, you know, when glam rock died, there was kind of a swing up of, you had hair metal die, when that died, grunge killed hair metal, etc. This kind of, the pendulum swings the other way all the time. And I felt like just before Creeper happened, we were kind of overdue a band like ours. And I was waiting for the band to come around. And in the end, it was mine. but yeah, I wasn't expecting it. And I realized that this, when I suddenly realized that these people were just me, it's that kind of really lonely kid listening to records and we didn't have a place to fit in, and they were fitting in at my shows. That became like a real, something I felt like really proud of. And I was really, it's one of the things I try to cultivate, like a safe space for people who feel like that too. But I always try to remember, like, all at the same time, like, these kids are going to be the kids making bands after me and starting making music. So I never ever would. I would hate, one of the worst things that would really bother me if I stopped doing this tomorrow would be if someone thought that like I had some sort of rock star ego, because that's not where, that's the world I'm from. And I just want, I'd always try and meet people after the shows as best I could. Unless, you know, one of the things that I find strange about this is how anxious you'd feel meeting most people who want to speak to you. That's a weird thing. Because you don't feel like that when you play in other bands. It's weird. But like, I always try to make time for people because I feel like they're just me. That's just exactly the same as who I was. Like, it's not scary talking to them. And you know, I just don't feel better than anyone. I feel still the same kid who was putting gigs on the top of a pub and jumping on his friends when a band played. You know, like, it's just weird. So, yeah, all that stuff is amazing. Seeing the callous heart everywhere was quite scary. You'd be at a show and you could see, like, I go to a gig and I could see the symbol everywhere. And you don't want to go up to everybody and go, not sure. Because that's weird. But like, so in the end, you just don't say anything until they come over. And then it's just, you know, but it's really nice. Like, genuinely, I kind of, I feel like I'm really proud of it. I think that, like, the community that we've cultivated is one of that are very creative and intelligent and empathetic people, you know, and I think that's really, really cool, and that's one of my favorite things about doing the band.
Yeah, well, that's what we've kind of found via doing this podcast now, and of course with the Blackout, is when you create these things, I never thought we'd have a community, we'd never have anybody who was, you know, coming together, especially because of us or whatever. Like now with the Patreon for the podcast, we're seeing people looking out for each other, sending each other presents. It's just blows
my mind.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. And yeah, I think when we start these bands, we never expect communities to grow and people to care. And then, yeah, like you said, like some of those people now who are into Creeper will go on to be the next, well, David Bowie's and stuff like that. So yeah, it's unbelievable when you think about it. To this day, now looking back on the stuff that I got to do with the Blackout, it's mind blowing. Yeah, it's just awesome to see that carrying on, and yeah, you guys killing it with it at the moment.
Man, what was it like? Those years when you were doing the Blackout, that was like at a time and place where like there was a lot of exciting things going on as well. It must have been like such an exciting time to be involved in music.
Eh? Yeah, it was nuts. It was just kind of a whirlwind, I suppose. And then, like you said, like after a while, then it kind of got a bit. I suppose I got jaded to it. Like I was like, okay, I'll go through the motions of the show. This is what I expect. I expect I'll probably be playing the song "Children of the Night" when I'm 95 in a pub to nobody. That's fine with me. But I'll always expect it to be there. And then all of a sudden, ha ha ha, it wasn't there. And it was just such a stark realization that, oh no, I thought I was going to be doing this forever. And it's like, oh, it's gone. And but yeah, it was nice to see, like, again, going back to community, it was like seeing the people who still loved the band, were still very supportive, and like a lot of them have come over to this as well, obviously. And yeah, I think a lot of those people like kind of kept me sane over the end of the blackout when it was all going wrong. But yeah, when it was happening, it was just such a whirlwind, and we were in that bubble of like, we were friends with all of those bands that were doing really, really well at that, like, kind of when the UK blew up in like 2007, 2008, I guess. And I genuinely believe we had one of the best scenes in the world and a blackout. But yeah, it was awesome at the time. And looking back on it, I can't believe I was involved in it, to be honest. It just feels like a different lifetime ago. So, when you were saying about like when you started the missing year and then you weren't sure about coming back, please always come back. Please come back. I cannot stress it enough. Your fans need it and you will need it. Come back. Don't split up. Just go on a massive long hiatus forever. But just...
Well, the thing is, you can always come back. Look at my camera back now, you know? Like, can we expect a blackout comeback?
Slightly different. One of them's kind of...
I know, but like, all I'm saying is...
One of them's kind of the biggest band of... in the world for the last maybe the last 10 years. The other one probably couldn't get 200 people in a room in Merthyr Tydfil anymore.
No, so, come on.
I don't know. And again, it's not up to me. I'd love to. I've said pretty much every podcast I've said I'd love to do it, but it's persuading the other bastards. It is.
I figured it out. The rest of the band had the creeper magic trick beforehand and just didn't tell you about it.
Imagine that. I wouldn't be surprised, right, that I am such a loudmouth gobshite, right, that they were like, we can't tell him, we're going to have 7 years off, we can't tell him. If we tell him, he'll tell other people we're coming back and that will spoil his thing. Yeah, so they'll call me up in like a year now and they'll be like, Sean, the band's back together, and I'll be like, yeah. you creep at me, yeah.
Oh, imagine.
What's going to be your guys' plans now for the rest of the year? I know the album comes out July 31st. What happens from then?
Well, we have this tour in August, but the way the world is looking right now, I don't know whether I can really rely on that being set in stone. We would have to rearrange it once. It's getting a bit ridiculous, you know? It's starting to look like its own stunt in itself, the way we keep rebooking this tour. I feel like we're going to have to kind of play it by ear in terms of actually performing live on a stage. But as soon as we can, we will. We've only played 5 times since we got back together again since November, because it's been so short-lived. We did the Baby Metal run and we did the November 1st show. So we're desperate to get back on stage. There's going to be a million, billion things around the record coming out. Like it's always very elaborate and complex with Creeper in terms of... the mystery and being thrown into that. So there's a lot going on in terms of that side of things. I guess we're just going to try our best to promote the record as we can. You know, it's a really odd time to be doing press. Constant phoners. There's only phoners you can do. Yeah. And I'm doing a photo shoot later on actually over Zoom. Over Zoom. Oh, wow. So I've never done that before. So that's insane.
How does that work?
Guys, I will report back on how it happens. Like, and I'm still not so sure myself, to be honest. I'm going to do my hair. It's all a bit floppy today.
Is that just a guy just screen capturing? Yep, you're not good to
hear. It's amazing magazine, isn't it? I think that I've seen some the magazine is doing it. So he sent me a Dropbox of a lot of singers and other things they've done, and they all look pretty decent.
Oh, nice.
I don't know. Maybe they'll be able to kind of wash me up a little bit, and airbrush me up a bit to make me look alright. I think my hair has got so floppy and long now. It feels like the haircut I had when I was about 16 again. My girlfriend keeps cutting the sides off. I feel like I should have done what you've done there. That's a really smart move there, Sean. You know, just the mullet.
He's having the mullet. Yeah. Little trim on the side. Look, low on the side. Up, part of the back. But this is the longest I've had it.
Who's done that for you, John? Who's been cutting that haircut for you?
Uh-oh.
Nobody.
No, that's not an accusation. I mean, is it you? Are you doing it yourself? Have you got like a partner doing it for you? Or?
I've had an illegal haircut. I snuck out and I was like, I literally paid the barber in goods as well, not even money. I was like, oh, I've got a couple of cans of Monster. Do you want these? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, hopefully I won't be arrested for that now, for admitting that I went for an illegal haircut. But
well, I think, aren't you allowed to do it now? I feel like the time's come where it's okay.
No, not yet. I don't think barbers are open until July the 13th. And it's different in England as well to Wales. We've got different...
We're different rules.
We're trying not to kill everybody in our country.
Yeah.
Whereas Boris Johnson's trying to kill everybody in your country. So... it's tricky, but yeah, as soon as I left the barbers, he texted me going, are you sure about that? And I was like, oh, it is nasty, like it is redneck and dreadful, but I love it at the moment. So that's what's going on.
Incredible. But we won't keep you for too long now, but there's two questions I did want to get into this conversation very quick. Obviously, and we've mentioned the whole Callous Heart and how big that has been with your audience and stuff, and really the love for that kind of misery black aesthetic. Now that you're back, you've kind of changed it to a white one. Does that mean you've had to have a completely new wardrobe?
Oh, yeah. The white wardrobe is one of those really difficult things. I actually got a funny story about that. I was on the set of a video shoot, and I persuaded everybody that the white thing was a really good idea, which I still think it was in principle. You know, the AFI did it on December Underground. That worked out okay. The Clockwork Orange thing, I thought that was going to be cool. Anyway, I bought a pair of white pants from somewhere. There were girls' white trousers. They were like white trousers. That's all I could get. That was kind of skinny fit. Anyway, as soon as I put them on, I very quickly realized that you could see my junk straight through these trousers. Oh, no. They were white. It was bad, guys. Ooh. It was really, really bad. I was like, I can't go and film in this. Like, I had to stand in this wet pool. They'd made like this pool, like really shallow water. So when you whip the mic lead, it would like whip along. It was really cool. But I was like, I literally can't go out there. Like, so I didn't know what to do. Luckily, my girlfriend was doing the makeup on the shoot. And so I was like, dude, you've got to help me with this. I don't know quite what to do. And I'm not told anybody this story yet, actually. But like, she came in and obviously absolutely loved this ridiculous situation I was in, but it was really funny. And we had to use electrical tape, the tape all of my junk. it was so ridiculous. She was trying to get me to tuck like a drag queen. And she watches all those shows. And so we Googled that. And I was like, that's not going to happen. I can't do that. Like, I don't know how. I was worried about the whole thing a lot. And so in the end, she just electrical taped, my private parts up so much so it was all tight, it wouldn't move, and did the shoot, came back, then I had to take the tape off.
Oh, I didn't think of that till now.
It was absolutely awful. It was absolutely terrible. Everyone was laughing at me as through their, like, in one of those little what are they called, like little little kind of dressing rooms, the mobile dressing room things, little terrapin things, and she was just ripping this tape off, and I was screaming. It was horrible. So yeah, that luckily she was there. I don't know what I would have done without that. Yeah. It had to be somebody else. But so the white wasn't that, has not been very practical, let's say, because you can see through it all the time. As soon as you sweat, you can see straight through it.
And, does this mean now when you eventually get to tour that you're going to have to tape every night? I mean, what's the...
No.
People are going to be looking out now for this.
I was looking into a dance belt for a while, you know? You heard of a dance belt?
Yeah.
Dance belt.
Okay.
Just
tipping the lighting guy. Just tipping the lighting guy £5. Just only light me from the waist up. That's
That'll be very handy. There was actually one time I was on tour with Pierce the Veil, and we were out somewhere in Europe, and I've been growing a hole in my skinny jeans, you know, like from playing every night. And my tour manager taped up my jeans, like made me basically like a diaper out of them. out of duct tape on top of my jeans, so this hole wouldn't get any worse. But the whole thing just ripped open anyway as I was playing. It was horrible. I'm like, absolutely awful in front of all these kids. It's horrible. But didn't actually see my bits. Don't worry, it was just my boxes. But that sort of thing seems to be following me around, these problems.
Oh, wow.
But the white costuming, I actually, because of the character I play, there's a few different costumes that he wears. So it's going to be like costume changes and things on stage when we come back. So yeah, trying to combat the white problem it seemed like such a great idea at the time. You know? It seemed like a clever idea.
And then Lil Will got involved and spoilt it all.
Exactly. Then once again, it's caused me some trouble, you know?
Oh wow!
Oh, brilliant! Morgan.
And the other thing I wanted to mention as well. Obviously, you talked a lot about the different influences you've always had from filmmaking, Bowie, and everything really. But is there any others that people really wouldn't really necessarily know that you were influenced by? Because I know wrestling as well is something that has really influenced you with a lot of stuff in the past.
Well, yeah, the wrestling thing has been, it's kind of difficult to watch wrestling at the moment with everything that's going on online. Professional wrestling is, it's in terms of theatrics, a spectacle. It's kind of unmatched in those ways. The moment when The Undertaker left his gloves and his hat inside the ring and left the ring, that was something that we referenced when we were leaving the Callous Heart jackets on the stage. That night, they were like when he was supposed to have retired, but he's never going to retire. even though he's retired again now. Professional wrestling's been a mainstay in terms of like stuff we've pulled from in the past. Because what all wrestling really is a collection of pop culture tropes like repurposed and fused together. It's not too dissimilar from what we do in terms of the band anyway. So it was a good reference point for a lot of the stuff we'd kind of pull off. So wrestling is definitely one of them. There's a lot of kind of the last record was obviously based on Jay and Barry's Peter Pan, and this one we had the K-Pax K-Pax story. So there's sometimes like books and things will and literature will inform what we're doing. Especially like we had this show on the last record where we had a giant World's Fair theme that was interrupted. So that was something I could tell you guys about. I had this big tour where it was based on a load of theme park rides. There's like a theme parks are another one of the things I find fascinating, kind of modern kind of art installations, in my opinion. And so we were referencing like a World's Fair that went wrong and was interrupted, which is a classic Universal Studios trope. If you've ever been to the park when they had the Terminator 2 3D 4D ride, it was supposed to be like a Skynet presentation that was interrupted by the characters from Terminator. So it was a reference to that. It was also a reference to the Temple of the Forbidden Eye, the Indiana Jones ride in California, where there was a giant mask with a laser comes out of its eye and sets fire to something. So we're doing lots of homages and tipping our hats and our heads to lots of classic theme park attractions. Wow. And now becoming kind of, They were supposed to be built kind of so you could ride the movies, but they've become kind of their own. They kind of stand in pop culture lore on their own now, aside from the films that they're supposed to represent. So a lot of that stuff, like anything that's kind of immersive anything that kind of works in a field of entertainment that's supposed to kind of take you away from reality is something I'm interested in most of the time.
Awesome. Yeah, well, nice. I've loved every second of this. Well, this being really insightful just great to hear everything behind Creeper and just behind the music, really.
Thank you, guys. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. This has been really fun.
Thank you very much. Well, let's hopefully when we're all allowed back out, let's try and do one of these in the flesh.
Yeah.
Very much like that, if possible.
Yeah, let's have a nice big beer as well. That'd be nice.
We'll have to do one with you and Hannah as a two former guests reunion.
That'd be great. It's been a while since I've seen her as well, actually. So it'd be nice to actually be in the same room as her.
That's true, right? Yeah. Awesome. Well,
nice. Well, yeah. Thank you very much, Will. Cheers.
Thank you so much, guys.
No worries. See you soon. Good luck with the record. Congratulations on everything so far.
Thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate that, guys. Thank you both.
You're listening to Sammy Podcast!
Yay! I think I enjoyed that a little bit what? Too much.
Jesus Christ, I've never heard you rev into a yes before. Oh my God, like, yeah! What is wrong with it? Yes, that was fantastic. Thanks again to Will from Creeper and the guys at 2000 Trees and stuff for sorting it all out. Yeah, that was so good. It made Morgan rev up, and I've never heard him rev up. Go back and listen to the other 84 episodes of this podcast. You're not going to hear any revving up like that.
No, you'll hear some very strange words and things pronounced wrong and just like random as hell questions, but never a rev up. But yes, Will was lovely. Thank you so much again for him to taking time out in his brand new house. Great to chat with him. Great to really get the insights of everything behind Creeper as well. Like, I thought it was really interesting that, like, not that the music is kind of like a second thought to them, but they have all this other artistic prowess planned out originally before you dive into all of that. And it was just a really good insight into someone else's different musical minds. Great laugh. And yes, we will 100% have to take him up on the offer of doing another podcast with him and our lovely friend Hannah Greenwood together as two former guests in one go.
Yeah, that would be very, very good. Yeah, like you said, it was super interesting to hear how they write and how they put thought into theatrics and stuff. Because, yeah, with my new band Raiders at the moment, I'd just be happy if we ever get any songs out. I don't think... I don't go in depth and be like, right then, we should wear this, we should look like this, we should say this, we should make a story. I just go, oh, can we put these songs out or... Can I just bust in now? But yeah, awesome. Absolutely awesome to see how other people write and come up with things. And yeah, it's always very, very exciting for me as well. So yeah, thanks again to Will for coming on and divulging all the information.
Yeah, and if you want even more Creeper talk, then go back and listen to episode 31 of Sapling Podcast with the wonderful Hannah Hermione Greenwood to get even more of your Creeper fix and her obsession with chocolate. But before all that as well, make sure to go and get yourself a copy of Creeper's new studio record, Sex, Death and the Infinite Void. It's been released on July 31st, but you can pre-order it. If you listen to it after it's out, then why haven't you bought it yet? That is a criminal offence, and the whole of Creeper will try and find you.
Oh, they will. I've heard they've just turned up at people's houses. I had a lucid dream once, and I woke up and they were all there.
Really?
Just at the edge of my bed, yeah. Creeper were just all standing there.
Did they say anything, or was it just...
No, that was it, really. I went back to sleep, man. It's a weird dream, innit? Anyway. Yeah, let's move on.
But yes, incredible. Love Creeper. New album is going to be fantastic, so everyone go and be a part of it. And if you'd like to tell us what you thought of this episode, or... how
please don't
at Sapling Pod and Twitter and Instagram is the place to go and do that, but only if you say very nice things.
Yes. No. Hey, come on, bring it on. We know you've got shit things to say. You've all got shit opinions. I've got shit opinions. Less you them. At SAPPENINPOD. Ah, they're too Welsh. Ah, they don't look goth enough to talk to our Will. I'm trying to think what other things people can say.
That Morgan's voice is too sexy.
Nobody's ever said that or will ever say that, and that's a fact. That's a stone cold Steve Austin fact.
At Sapling Pod on Twitter and Instagram if you disagree with Sean, and give us a follow while you're making sure while you're on all that.
Right, word of the week is hashtag Morgan sexy voice, right? And I'm going to put a poll up on our Twitter. Does Morgan have a sexy voice? Yes or no? Right? So I'm going to need you guys this week. Maybe the Saturday this episode goes out. Friday goes out. Saturday I'll post. Is Morgan's voice sexy? Yes or no? And I'd like everybody who's listening to this to vote no.
I'll vote.
Because it's truthful.
Yeah.
What?
I'll vote no as well, to be fair.
Good. If we don't get 100% no, and of course, I know now, listen to this, some bastards will be like, I know what'll annoy Sean. A yes! And I know you've done it purposefully now just to piss me off. So, your votes are now void, and I will only be accepting no answers.
I don't think that's how the poll works.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm not even going to put a poll out. You all voted no. That's it. That's it.
But if you do want to annoy Sean, well, I've got a little secret for you, okay? The best place to go and do that, right, is at patreon.com/sapnin. You can become a part of our wonderful community where you get to bully Sean every single day.
Yep, you can do, and let me tell you, they do. So check out patreon.com/sapnin to become part of the Sap Fam community. And yeah, you can come in there and you can pretend to be nice for a couple of weeks, and then you can just pile on their horrible memes at the expense of my face. That's absolutely fine, and I welcome it. So thank you very much to everybody who's already part of the Patreon, no matter which tier you've decided to partake in. We love you all the same.
We do. We love you all very, very much. And we're posting loads of bonuses on our Patreon wall exclusively for the people who support this podcast. So if you want even more ramblings of myself and Sean talking about Muppets, of all things, yeah, then it's the place to be.
This week's were Muppets and self-fellatio. So there you go. If you're interested in knowing what me and Morgan's thoughts on self-fellatio are, and I know you do, check out patreon.com/sapnin.
And before we get into all the thank yous that we need to do for this episode, because there's a lot of them and there's so many people that really we do love, is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Sean? Is there anything on your mind, apart from murder, that you'd like to talk about?
Clever. I like it. Song lyrics. This week, our good friend's Funeral for a Friend announced that they are going on tour in April next year. Is it April? I haven't checked. I think it might be April.
It's April 2021.
Nice. So yeah, tickets are on sale now, I believe. Get them ASAP. I would, because it's bound to sell out. And I was lucky enough to tour with them in October last year, and it was three of the best days of last year. So definitely go and check it out. Pick up a Funeral for a Friend ticket. I'm sure they're going to have some amazing supports with them. Yeah, so check that out.
Yes.
What other news is there, Morg?
We have been hosting 2,000 Screens. If you haven't checked out already, make sure to head over to the 2,000 Trees Festival's official Facebook and Instagram pages, where you can see us in video form interviewing loads of bands, introducing exclusive live performances for the festival, and just bringing this podcast madness in the form of videos, which is strange. You get to see our deformed faces on your phones. I mean, you could just do that by going and liking all our stuff on Sapnin Pod on Instagram and Twitter anyway, but you know, it's on someone else's platform, so you might want to go and relive your festival vibes with us.
Yeah, and here's a behind the scenes thing for you. In one of the interviews I'm doing, I've got some chili sauce on my face because I completely forgot to check before we started recording. So for one of them, it's only one interview, I've got a bit of chili sauce on my face. So if you watch that interview, keep a lookout for the chili sauce. If you watch all the interviews, if you watch 2,000 Screens, keep a lookout for Sean's saucy cheek.
Oof. Lovely. Lovely stuff. 2,000 Screens happening from July 9th to 11th, 2020. So yes, go and check it out. So Sean, we need to say thank you to so many lovely people for not only listening to this podcast. If this is your first time, make sure you are subscribing whatever platform you've chosen. If it's Spotify, Acast, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Give us a nice comment and everything. But we need to say a massive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. Those are the top tiers. And Sean is going to read their wonderful names for you right about now.
Don't you ever tell me how to live my life. I'll do it when I feel like it now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just thought I was giving you a good segue. There's a fly that's landed right on my head. There you go. Yep, it's gone now. But for that second of me talking, there was a fly on my head, which is all the information everyone's ever needed from one of these podcasts.
Yeah. So thank you very much to anybody at all who's part of our Patreon at any tier. We promise, we love, and we care for every single one of you. Don't be shy, make yourself known in the group. Yeah, so thank you very much to Dana Lasnova, Mayumi Liwaway, Kylie Wheeler, Mitch Perry, Amy Chilvers, Emma Barber. Shout out to all the Patreons who support Sapnin. You're all elite members. Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much, Janelle. Amandine Urbano, Kelly Young, Nathan Croshaw. We are Sapnin family. Get up, everybody, and sing. That's by formerly known as Dilly Grimwood. Mo Dick's Eyebrows Know What You Did in the Dark. Paul Urshfield, Liam Connolly, Kelly Irwin, Michael Engler, Tom Owen, Doug Sir Swishreema. Shout out to all Sapnin Patreons. Scott Wasak coming over the hill. The end of lockdown. Lockdown Jones. We love all tiers, that's Oliver Amesbury, Simon Amos, Kate Stevenson, No We Don't Get Sapnin Depressed, Lucy Deards, Living Sapnin Life is Fun and We've Just Begun, Erin Howard, Becky Andy, Martina McManus, John and Emma, Kelly Mallory, Marcy Jacobson, Louis Cook, Kieran Lewis, Sarah Stewart, Sandra Kuacek, Jamie O'Amy, Mike Cunningham. Good news, I figured out the solution to the coronavirus. It was actually pretty simple. We just need to... character limit there at the end. So yeah, if you can get back to us on what the solution is, that'd be wicked. Livy Cropper, James McNaught, that bitch Sarah Baskins, Kelly Cannon, Tallulah Grant, Stuart McNaught, Samuel Griffiths, Amy O'Jamie, Sharif Awad Ali, Jenny Robertson, Tony Michael, Lydia Henderson, Nuala Clark, Keris Andrews, Jason Hered... Oh, here we go, we got a new one. Jason Heredia. Right, that's probably wrong, Jace. I'm so sorry. You've become part of the podcast group today. I said hello, and now I'm stuck on your surname. Jason Heredia. And last but not least, Shania West for President 2020. If you've listened to all of that, thank you very much. Congratulations. If you're not part of the Patreon and you've listened to that, unbelievable. Let us know on at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram that you listen to the end of this bollocks, because I don't think anybody who's not a Patreon doesn't get this far. This is where we should be putting all our secret information. Okay. Once we've weeded off the listeners every week with this name bit, here's where we should be go. Oh yeah, by the way, next week's winning lottery numbers are 7, 21, 33, 41, 42 and 46, and the bonus ball is 27. Right. Somebody's going to put that on now. If they win, they've got to give me, I don't know, 10% of it.
Literally going to say, you know, you've just predicted numbers there. What happens now if that is the correct lottery winning numbers and you haven't put it down yourself?
I wonder if I could win the lottery, because this will be recorded prior to the lottery going out now on a Saturday. I wonder if I could go, I was going to do it. Here's the proof that I was going to do the numbers. Here's the numbers. And they go, fair enough. Mind you predicted them live on a podcast. Here's 70 grand. I'd be like, fucking tidy. Nice one, Camelot. You mystical place.
Well.
Anyway,
please gamble responsibly for anyone listening. Is that gambling? I don't have a clue.
And drink responsibly as well if you're doing 2,000 screens this weekend.
Yes, some people have created their own drinking game for us as well, which is only going to end badly. And you know that when Jimmy Eat World will be performing, I will freak out and everyone will have to down their drink, so...
That's true. That is true. So, yeah, thank you very much if you've listened to the Sapnin Pod this week and now and before. And also thank you if you've checked out 2,000 screens. Thank you very much if you've come here from 2,000 screens. That's what we didn't think. What if people... Yeah, I wonder if anybody's going to come over from the pod from 2,000 screens. So if you've watched 2,000 screens and this is your first Sapnin podcast, number one, sorry. Also, number two, let us know. Because we would love to hear from you.
Yes, we would. We'd love to hear from every single one of you. You are all amazing. You are some of our favourite people for just listening to this podcast. And I would like to thank you personally, but I can't. So I'm doing it on this instead.
Because, yeah, that's right, Morg. I wouldn't like to thank him personally, would I? You fucking, how can I make this so I'm better than Sean every week?
What? So confused.
Yeah, let's carry on this fight next week. Anyway, let's go. Sapnin!
Sapnin?
You fucking dead, but you fucking having it next week. I tune in next week just to fucking hear the battering you were going to have. Verbal fucking battering. I'm going to kill you, but... Anyway, I got a sandwich treat, so... tidy.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.